Welcome to Reflections on Victory. I'm Christy DeHaven. 80 years ago this month, Germany surrendered to the Allies and celebrations began for Victory in Europe Day. In the following programme, we'll reflect on the time the artillery fire was swapped for street parties, hearing from voices from the past and some from just this past week. In 1995, Roger Watterson produced a wonderful episode of Sunday Opinion to mark the 50th anniversary of VE Day. Where the skyline is the
sun. In today's programme, we recall Victory in Europe Day, the 8th of May 1945, through the eyes of Manx men and women, and we hear the experiences of others who now live here but were living in England at that time. The late summer of 1944 was marked by a series of advances through the remnants of the German armed forces in France, and the Allied armies arrived on the Seine only 80 days after D-Day. Shortly afterwards, Brussels and Paris were liberated.
Here is the news, read by Richard Wessel. Paris has been liberated. A communique just received from General Koenig announces that it has been liberated by French forces of the interior.
Some setbacks were experienced at Arnhem with Operation Market Garden and in the Ardennes during the Battle of the Bulge, but on the 8th of May 1945, the Allies crossed the Rhine.
The Allies are across the Rhine. Troops under General Hodges established a bridgehead on the east bank south of Bonn yesterday afternoon. A Reuters report from the 1st American Army says that the crossing was made at Remagen, which is about 25 miles south of Cologne between Bonn and Koblenz.
The Allies fought from the west and the Russians from the east, meeting in April. Berlin surrendered unconditionally on the 2nd of May. However, Hitler didn't live to see it. He'd committed suicide on the 30th of April.
Here is a news flash. The German radio has just announced that Hitler is dead. I repeat that. The German radio has just announced that Hitler is dead.
2 days later, Field Marshal Montgomery took the surrender of all German forces in the north. And on May the 7th, the unconditional surrender of Germany to the Western Allies and to Russia was agreed. The instrument was signed by General Jodl for the defeated and Generals Badel-Smith and Sir Slaproff for the victors. General Seve also signed for France. The war in Europe was at an end.
This is the BBC Home Service. We're interrupting programmes to make the following announcement. It is understood that in accordance with arrangements between the three great powers, an official announcement will be broadcast by the Prime Minister at 3 o'clock tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon, the 8th of May.
The news of Germany's surrender, although long expected, was an occasion of wild rejoicing. In Britain, years of drabness and belt-tightening were forgotten as an entire nation took to the streets. At 3 p.m, Winston Churchill addressed the nation. The radio broadcast was relayed to people in the streets by loudspeakers.
Yesterday morning, at 2:41 a.m., at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl, the representative of the German High Command and of Grand Admiral Dönitz, the designated head of the German state, signed the act of unconditional surrender of all German land, sea, and air forces in Europe to the Allied Expeditionary Force and simultaneously to the Soviet High Command. We may allow ourselves a brief period of rejoicing. But let us not forget for a moment the toils and efforts that lie ahead. Japan, with all her treachery and greed, remains unsubdued. the injuries she has inflicted upon Great Britain, the United States, and other countries.
Hundreds of thousands of people began to celebrate. Licensing laws had been relaxed on this one occasion, and normal British reserve went by the board as strangers hugged, kissed, sang, and danced. The Isle of Man Examiner reported the celebrations in these words.
Tuesday was truly a day for great rejoicing in the Isle of Man. It was the day when victory in Europe was officially proclaimed by the broadcast of the Prime Minister, VE Day. Following Mr. Churchill's historic announcement of the unconditional surrender of the whole of the German forces, land, sea and air, there was pandemonium for a little while in Douglas when the sounding of the last all clear from the sirens vied with the blare of ship sirens and the pealing of church bells, heralding the glad tidings and calling people to services of thanksgiving. The Mayor of Douglas and members of the Town Council attended St. Thomas's Church. Following the announcement of capitulation, the services were early astir in the town. Naval men were in great force and provided great fun with their antics, and the army paraded with greatcoats and caps back to front, complete with accordion and drums. Long queues formed for ice cream, the making of which had just been permitted by revocation of the control order, and there were crowds at shops which happened to have stocks of fireworks. It was sheer bedlam going through Strand Street during the evening, with fireworks popping off all over the place. Many of the hotels, seeing the way things were going, decided to close down about 8:30 p.m., a wise decision. There was great merriment in many of the streets. In Hillside Avenue and Hillside Terrace, for instance, children and grown-ups danced to a barrel organ, and games followed, prizes being provided by neighbours. Chester Street rose to the occasion, mothers bringing tables out on the pavements and giving the children a tea and dance by lamplight under waving decorations. Many bonfires were built, the largest being on the tar patch opposite Noble's Hall, an effigy of Hitler taking the place of the guy. Night on the promenade saw a lovely display of fireworks provided by the services, while officers at the Falcon set off hundreds of very lights. On VEA Day plus one, the celebrations were continued, though there was a noted anticlimax in rejoicing. The band of the Royal Naval School of Music played opposite Villa Marina in the morning, the Salvation Army Band played at the Jubilee Clock in the afternoon, and the Douglas Brass Band did their share later by the Villa. One young man will not remember VE Day, and yet will never forget it. Here's the baby son, born at the Jane Crookall Maternity Home on Tuesday to Chief Petty Officer and Mrs. Sykes, 69 Brayhill, Douglas. The committee of the home have decided to present him with a savings certificate to augment his auspicious start in life. The children in Murray's Road and Farrant Street were entertained at a party given in Salisbury Street School on Wednesday, over 100 children and helpers being present. After an excellent tea, which was made possible by the generosity of the residents and the tradesmen in the area, ice cream and sweets were distributed, and races were held for which war-saving certificates were given as prizes. Mrs. Hunter and Mrs. Christian organised the effort, and the balance in hand will be donated to a war charity.
Broadcaster and journalist Terry Kringle was one of the many who celebrated in Douglas in 1945.
I was 14 at the time. I was still at the high school, but at 14 I was allowed out on my own. And on VE night, my friends and I went downtown to observe the celebrations, and I'd never seen anything like it in my young life. Obviously, there were a great many servicemen who were stationed in Douglas, and they were really dancing in the streets. Now, how much of that was due to drink, I don't know, but I think a lot of it really was genuine euphoria at the end of the war. And they were wandering around with uniforms and hats on back to front, and they were playing drums and bagpipes, all sorts of musical instruments. They were running around the streets, they were shouting, they were letting off fireworks. Where they got the fireworks from, I don't know. But they were indeed letting off fireworks. And what they were also letting off, and this was really terrifying, were thunder flashes. Now, anybody who's been in the service will know what a thunder flash is. That's what the instructor throws at you during manoeuvres to get you used to the real noise of the battlefield. And if one of these things gets anywhere near you, it can blow you right off your feet. Anyway, these things were firing off right down in Strand Street until all hours of the night. And my pals and I walked up and down Strand Street along the promenade and observed it all. I think we knew we were seeing something absolutely remarkable, and I, for one, stored it all up in my mind. It seems to me that the next day the celebration was rather more muted. I think people then realised that only the European War was over and there was still a great deal of fighting to be done out in Japan. And obviously these people must have thought, well, we've finished our war, why should we go and fight that one, especially when it's obvious that there's going to be an awful lot of people killed. However, history showed that it was not to be.
Vivian Allen now resides in Castletown, but in 1945 she lived in London and joined in the celebrations at Buckingham Palace.
Oh, yes, I remember VE Day. In fact, I'll never forget it. I was a teenager then. I was living in London with my parents and my younger brother in a flat overlooking Battersea Park. And from the balcony, we'd watched the glow in the sky from the London docks burning at the beginning of the 1940 Blitz. And my main reaction to VE Day was, no more bombs, no more doodlebugs, no more V2s. I mean, one could hardly believe it when I'd grown up with it and got so used to it. Come the great day, my brother and I begged to be allowed to go up west, up to the West End. My mother wasn't very keen on the idea, but she instructed my brother to look after me, and she made us sandwiches, which we packed in our gas mask cases. We'd just thrown them in the dustbin ceremoniously. And those gas masks, at the beginning of the war, the first term of the war at my boarding school, we were made to do one lesson a day in our gas masks to get used to them. And the rubbery smell and the claustrophobic feel is with me still. And, well, I don't know whether you breathed in or out, and the rubber at the side on your cheeks sort of flapped. It was most peculiar. Anyway, off my brother and I went on the bus to Hyde Park Corner, and we got caught up in the crowds along Constitution Hill to the palace, and we found ourselves just beside the Victoria Memorial. Well, there's not much of me. I'm barely 5 foot tall, so of course I couldn't see very much. My brother was a bit taller and he was looking around. And we were beside a group of American sailors, and one big brawny sailor caught me round the waist and swung me up onto his shoulder. Of course, from that vantage point, I could see everything, the whole of the crowd stretching back down the Mall and all shouting, "We want the king." And I could also remember my baby brother's upturned face, looking rather anxious should he have allowed his sister to be handled like this. And then the roar when we saw the French windows onto the balcony open, and out came the king and queen, followed by the princesses, with Princess Elizabeth in her ATS uniform, and Winston. And then the shouting changed to Winnie, and he was giving his famous V sign. And then went on to Trafalgar Square. Of course, that was packed. We climbed up on the plinth of Nelson's column, and we sat there and ate our sandwiches. And there was just sort of general shouting and cheering and frolicking in the fountains.
You're listening to Reflections on Victory as we commemorate the 80th anniversary of victory in Europe.
In 1945, Manxman Terry Blackburn was the assistant town clerk for Castletown.
My strongest recollection of VE Day is of two American jeeps tearing down through Maloo Street. They were the crew of an American bomber, which on hearing that the war was at an end and had made their way to the Isle of Man and landed at Jervey. And they had been told that the best place to celebrate VE Day was in Castletown. And they came down through Maloo Street in these open jeeps, were whooping and shouting and one thing and another, and they joined in with the general merriment on the market square. And there were literally hundreds of people on the market square, and it was celebrated to the early hours of the morning. But at that time, Castletown was a very, very busy place. At Janet's Corner, there was, of course, a naval camp. And again, there was naval camps just opposite the present air terminal. At Scarlet, there was a radar station, and there were several hundreds of WAFs and assorted Air Force personnel. In the whole of the radar station, there were several giant masts to send out signals and to receive the signals. It was part of the military defence of the British Isles. And the remains of hutments still exist round Scarlet, where units of soldiers protected the area. The period after the war was a period of rebuilding and largely resettlement. Janet's Corner, the Nissen huts which had been used by the naval personnel, were used temporarily for dwellings, for not only returning soldiers and their wives, but there'd been no building done during the war, and there was a lack of housing. But when Elizabeth II came to the throne, it seemed like a new era, and everybody was very keen to set an example and to build not only a new Britain, but a new Isle of Man. And it was a very optimistic period. Whether all that optimism has been justified or not, I don't know. I'll have to leave that to the present younger generation.
Harvey Briggs still farms in Onchan the lands he tended during the Second World War, and he's strong memories of the victory in Europe. He tells us about his experiences on the farm and reads the May the 8th entry from his 1945 diary.
Throughout the war, I'd worked on the farm of Ballochkilmartin here on the Whitebridge Hill in Onchan. And I suppose we felt rather guilty that while our friends had gone to the war, and many of them, of course, made the supreme sacrifice, we who were on the farms were comparatively safe, except that I can say this, I never worked harder in my life. And it was a great relief when there were signs that the war was coming to an end. On May the 8th, VE Day, I wrote in the diary that I kept at the time these words: "For the past few days it has been apparent that the end of the European war is close at hand. With allied might of Russia, America and Britain crushing on and entering Berlin, with the Germans' own admission that the Führer is dead, and the steady disintegration of the much flaunted Wehrmacht, nothing could prevent the neutralizing of German resistance. At 3 p.m., a simultaneous announcement by the leaders of the three great powers heralds the unconditional surrender of Germany, and we sincerely hope the dawn of a new era of peace and prosperity for all the peoples, victors or vanquished, of Europe." As we listen to the steady oration of Winston Churchill, our great Prime Minister, we think of all the suffering caused by the aggressive Nazis, of their avaricity and desire for power, and now of the victory over these things we've been fighting. And so tonight, throughout the country, people flock to the special services held in our churches and to give thanks for our deliverance and to pray for peace in our time. Never can the desire of peace have been so manifest as it is today. But now, as Mr. Churchill suggests, we should make merry and celebrate our victory. Today and tomorrow are declared public holidays, and even if the nation realizes that much of its hardest tasks will follow the war, a point not grasped after the First World War, we can for the present indulge in revelry. And so a big crowd of young people gather in Lexi for a victory social. Admission was free, and even when the last all-clear sounded from Lexi police station, that to announce the official end of the European war and the end of our dancing in the Working Men's Institute, we gather on the garden street and for a further 2 hours give vent to our feelings with a grand selection of songs, old and new, published and unprintable ones as well, and interspersed occasionally with a game of Kiss the Ring. Our music making continues till the crowds become a small gathering and we stage the grand finale with a grand patriotic song. On the next day, which I record as V-Day plus one, Wednesday, May the 9th, I wrote, "Onchan Village, always to the fore in public duties or celebrations, is the scene of a victory carnival, fancy dress parade and sports, and provide an afternoon's enjoyment few of us will ever forget. Among the vehicles in the parade is a decorated lorry loaned by Mrs. Cacken of Birch Hill Farm, Onchan, and drawn by Billy, our horse, driven by myself, ably assisted by Mr. Fletcher Crane. Mounted on the lorry is a tableau representing all who have contributed to the great Allied victory. Even Billy appears to realize the significance of the occasion and suitably prances through the village to a field on the Howe Road where the sports are held. In the evening, Onken Village Hall is thrown open for dancing to the swing of a Royal Marines band. In all, a memorable day we shall always remember.
Harvey Briggs there, finishing off the Sunday Opinion special produced in 1995 by Roger Watterson and Charles Webster. Just a few days ago, May the 8th, 2025, marked the 80th anniversary of VE Day. A commemoration concert and drumhead service took place at the Villa Marina, and you'll be able to listen back to excerpts from this in Thursday evening's Island Life special with Judith Lay. But also last week, Amy Griffiths visited residents of the Grovemount Residential Home to record their reflections of the event.
My name's John. I was 15.
You're telling me you're 95?
Yeah.
You don't look a day over 70. I don't believe that for a second.
How much did you want the barrel of?
So what do you remember of the war then?
I remember it well. Although we lived in Bradford and we didn't have much damage there, there was a shop that used to sell pies. And they had a smoking pie in the window, an artificial thing, of course. And the only bomb that fell was fell on this pie.
Just on the one pie?
Yeah.
What are your memories of VE Day?
Oh, well, I was in Pudsey then, and, of course, everybody was out dancing.
Because was there just a real massive sense of relief that it was finally over?
Oh, yeah. I was quite happy that the war was over and everything was... We could get back to normal, really.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Alan. The first thing I was 8 years old, and the day the war broke out, and I remember them, they brought the radio into the church, and we listened to Neville Chamberlain's speech, saying that we are now at war with Germany. 10 minutes after they said this, the local council started the air raid siren. So I was sitting in the choir store, and I decided, well, I'm not going to stop here while it's an air raid, I'm going to go home. You know, they'll sit down soon, you're all right. And during the war, my father was called up. He was called up for the RAF. He didn't go abroad, but he served down south on the south coast all the time, shooting down doodlebugs, flying bombs as they came over.
How did it feel having your dad serving?
Very proud, actually. He used to come home in his uniform. Nothing better than to walk down the street with his father in uniform, you know.
And so in that sense, I suppose VE Day had even more of a profound effect because you knew that hopefully that meant your dad was coming home.
Well, that's right, yeah, that's right, of course. But the thing was, I got ready to go to school, and I was getting ready to go to school, and my mother said, I think you'll be sent home, mind. I said, why? She said, well, I'm sure I just heard two men talking in the street outside. They said the Germans had surrendered. So I went to school, though, and they said, the Germans have surrendered. This is going to be called VE Day, and you can all go home. You know, you've got the rest of the week off. And I remember that evening, they built the most enormous bonfire. And I always remember a chap, he came out halfway through with a kilt on and did a Highland fling in front of the bonfire. And then after that, that was it, you know, it was time to go home and forget about it, yeah.
I'm hoping I've got the right blue jumper. Is it Derek?
Yes, Derek.
Derek, hi.
I remember my dad going to war and coming back and bringing 7 medals with him. And he was fighting the war in North Africa, and in Malta, he was chasing the enemy troops there, and then he came around to England, and he started fighting the war from that side of the channel.
And how did that make you feel as his son? Must be an immense amount of pride.
I'm so proud of him. I've got medals on the wall. They're there, and I'm so proud of him. He had a medal given special from the French for helping them out. Yes, I was just a young lad, but I could appreciate the fact that I was without him and not here, and glad when he came back.
I do remember VE Day. I'd just been left school about 6 months. I don't remember anything in particular except being kissed by absolutely everybody. My father hadn't been away for very long, but he had been away. He was out east and sent lots of lovely things home.
Like what?
Oh, well, like we had chocolates and things rationed here. He sent boxes of things home. And He even sent some Indian carpets home for the house.
And Gene, your husband, fought in the war, didn't he? And so what did he do?
Well, he was a bomber pilot. He bombed Germany and several other places too. Then after the war, he was bringing prisoners of war home, which was very sad.
Because what kind of impact did it have on him? Did he ever talk about it much?
No, he didn't. We'd visit his bomber, and I'd just sit quietly whilst we had dinner and hear them talk, because they talked about things that they wouldn't talk about in front of other people. The bomber said that he never knew how my husband got them back, because when they got back, he counted there had been 52 hits on the aeroplane, and yet he got them back and managed to land somewhere as well. He got the MBE and the DFC and bar, and of course I went to Buckingham Palace.
So were you proud of him and proud of the work that he did there?
I was very proud of him.
Back in the year 2025, and celebrations are taking place once again across the island to mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day, from acts of remembrance to special concerts. But when I asked Derek why it was important for us to still remember the events of the Second World War 8 decades on, and how he felt when it was over, he only had this to say.
There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free.
A poignant end to those reflections from the Grovemount residential home. You can listen to the full interviews as a newscast at manxradio.com. We will continue to mark this special anniversary on Thursday evening at 5:30 p.m. when Judith Lay brings us her own programme commemorating 80 years since the World War II guns fell silent in Europe. Thank you for listening.